Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times.
I mostly write about how humans relate to technology.
And I write about how movies and popular culture relate to humans.
This is Still Processing. So we're back.
Hi.
In action in our pop culture confession booth.
How is the moon?
Brilliant and resplendent and just full of so much beautiful energy.
I told somebody I love to make a wish. I hope
it's
that person did it.
Not how it works, but that's okay. That's nice. It's nice you did that. So speaking of wishes, what else is top of mind for you?
I saw the best movie over the weekend.
Ooh.
Yes. I saw a movie called It Comes at Night. It is a horror movie that is not functioning the way normal horror movies do. It is in the vein of where we are right now with horror movies, which is like the monsters are actual real-life human beings. The director, his name is Trey Edward Schultz. This guy is so talented. Barry Jenkins, Damien Chazelle, Trey Edward Schultz, directors who, by their second movie, are like quite clearly super-duper good at their jobs. It Comes at Night. It is playing at theaters all over the country right now. Please go see it. Jenna, you wrote this great technology column for the magazine last weekend about intellectual property that isn't quite intellectual property the way we've come to think of it. So when memes become movies, for instance, who gets credit for that? And it reminded me of something we mentioned in a previous episode, just kind of flippantly, where we were talking about movies that should get made. And we flippantly came up with something called Barbecue Crashers, where we cast Zoe Kravitz in a movie where she apparently was going around to crash people's barbecues. People on Twitter told us that it was a good idea. I'm just saying, I don't want Twitter giving Ava DuVernay our movie. We should have got on this.
It's ours.
I want
the
money.
We're doing it.
And lastly, Bill Cosby has lost his mind. I mean, we already knew he had lost it, but now he is bringing Keisha Knight Pulliam, who played Rudy on the show, to the courtroom. He is doing Fat Albert on his way in. He's going, hey, 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 on his way into the courtroom. I mean, I can't say I was agnostic about this, but it is infuriating what he is doing to people who don't know what to do with this man and what he is accused of having done to all of these women. I wish I had something happier to kick to you, but that's where I am right now.
I'll take it. And I do, maybe I have an antidote for you. Maybe I have a balm for that angst you're feeling, which is magnesium spray. And magnesium is calming. It soothes muscle pain. It's something that I've gotten in a spray bottle, and now I use it all the time. And it makes me feel so light and happy. So I'll bring some for you.
Thank you.
I also saw an incredible movie over the weekend. It wasn't actually a movie, it was a trailer. It was a Black Panther trailer. It looks amazing. Ryan Coogler's film. They're showing a trailer, what, a year before it even comes out? I don't care. All I want is my future DNA donor, Michael B. Jordan. Yes, I'll take it. Danai Gurira, who plays Michonne on Walking Dead, serving it up. Lupita, I mean, it looks so insane. I had no expectations for this, but they were blown out of the water. I'm ready. Take me to Wakanda. Take me to Wakanda. Over the weekend, SZA, who's a Brooklyn musician, super ethereal, came out with her debut album called Control. It's spelled Kitaro, like the key, so that's how I'm pronouncing it, but I'm assuming it's Control. It is so good. It is the summer album we've been waiting for. It is really sensual, but you can play it at a barbecue. You can play it at the beach. I'm here for it. Why am I so easy to forget like that? It can't be that easy for you to get like that. Oh, no, she didn't. Oh, yes, I did. Oh, no, she didn't. I'll do it again. Leave me. That's what I've got.
All right, so that's what's in our brains. What should we talk about?
You know, you're not going to like this, but I think we've got to do it, which is I think we've got to talk about Cosby because it's in the air. No, but it's everywhere. And it's not even just this case. It's informing how we talk about history. It's informing how we talk about cultural memory. It's a discussion around who has the right to one's legacy.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'll give you a little spritz with my oil before we start.
Oh, God bless you, Jenna Wortham. But listen, before we do that, I think we should talk about the other thing that happened.
The other elephant in the room?
I mean, is it an elephant?
The other witness?
Yeah.
In the room.
Katy Perry put out an album last Friday.
Did she? I didn't even know she was still making music.
Anyway, so we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Katy Perry, her album Witness, and how we're not talking about her album Witness. We're talking about everything else related to Katy Perry. On Friday, Katy Perry released a record. It's called Witness, and it's not about something she saw. It's about something she's hoping we see, which is her doing anything, even if it's sitting in a house for 3 days in front of a bunch of cameras like she's on Big Brother. She just wants us to acknowledge that she still exists and that she still matters.
Does
and
she?
I don't know. That's what we're going to talk about. Uh-huh. But it's so desperate to me. It is as though she went to some sort of racial sensitivity class.
She definitely watched some YouTube videos. She definitely started reading her mentions. She's definitely started, you know, searching for herself online and her Twitter. You know, she's trying to convince us she's learned something.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's all an elaborate stunt.
She has been made to feel that she's committed some cultural appropriation in her music. She has maybe become overly familiar with Black people in a way that makes Black people uncomfortable.
She's putting tracing paper over every culture and ethnicity and just, you know, copying what works best for her. Whatever look she's trying to co-opt, you know.
Right.
She enjoys it.
An example of what we're talking about and her attempt to, like, to be down and Katy Perry at the same time, because as you discover listening to this record, the two don't happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
She is brought in Nicki Minaj on this song Swish Swish, which is, can't believe I'm saying that.
We should listen to the song, but also keep in mind too that this was a contender for Song of the Summer that people thought we missed. So people are enjoying it. So let's hear a little bit of it first and then let's talk about it.
Swish, swish, another one in the basket. Swish, swish, another one in the casket. Come on, Katy Perry.
I know.
Who are you murdering?
My read on this is a very post-election pop culture meltdown. She didn't really get Hillary elected. She's struggling to refine her identity.
Oof.
She didn't find it in pop culture feminism. Where do you think she's at right now? Because I never really got Katy Perry. I was always happy to bop to Firework, Dark Horse, love
Teenage
it when it came
Dream,
on.
One
love
of the
it when
most
those songs
perfect
came on
song
during spin class.
Time. Yes.
Like, super happy to exercise those classic songs. Fine. But I don't understand what's happening with her right now.
What's going on with her is she needs a little bit of publicity for this record. So she live streams herself for 3 days in this house.
Huh.
Some very special guests come by. James Corden comes by to play a little game with her where she talks about which of her famous ex-lovers is perhaps one of the best.
Interesting.
Yes. I mean, things like she's pouring out her heart in some way. She's doing nothing in another way. But she's letting you into something that, by contrast, a Beyoncé would never do. Beyoncé is staging a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm,
and Katy
mm-hmm.
Perry is doing by what, in contrast, seems more real, more transparent,
right?
More intimate.
Right.
She's sitting in a bathrobe by a pool with a bunch of weird things on a table, like a giant, what looks like a big cow tongue.
Huh.
There's something mildly embarrassing about this to me, but it keeps getting weirder when she, for instance, goes on DeRay McKesson's podcast to talk about cultural appropriation and how she, for instance, in the clip we're about to play, learned some things about a Black lady's hair.
Okay, let's hear it.
I've made several mistakes, even in like the This Is How We Do video about how I wore my hair. and having a hard conversation with one of my empowered angels, Cleo, about what does it mean? Why can't I wear my hair that way? Or what is the history behind wearing the hair that way? And she told me about the power in Black women's hair and how beautiful it is and the struggle. And I listened and I heard and I didn't know. And I won't ever understand some of those things because of who I am. I will never understand, but I can educate myself.
So one of my pals in LA, Ira Madison III, wrote a really great tweet in response to this fiasco that I want to read. White women who want to apologize for racist SHIT never seem to do it face to face with a Black woman. Which I think is actually, because what she's talking about in that clip where she's like, the hair, like she can't even really even say like Black hairstyles. She can't even talk about what she was doing, which is wearing her hair in braids. But it wasn't just that she was wearing her hair in braids. She was also eating a piece of watermelon. Yeah, so it wasn't just cluelessness around a hairstyle that someone gave her. She was wearing blackface, essentially, and she doesn't want to deal with that. So this way of, and I mean, she also showed up dressed like a geisha at the AMAs in 2013. I mean, essentially, she was in yellowface. Like, she's not really being accountable for the ways in which she's borrowed other people's cultures in a way that is impossible to do in the other way.
It's so maddening.
It's so maddening.
And yet, where is the evidence of having learned, right?
The album's still number one, so there's the, you know.
Well, that magic is working.
Right.
But you listen to this album, and there's songs on there like Bon Appetit with Migos, where, like, it's my least favorite genre of pop song, right? Like, sex food songs, I hate those. There's only one good one. I'm sure somebody will come at me with another one. And it's one nobody's heard before, so I won't even go into it. It's Martika's Kitchen by Martika. Though I don't want to hear about all, like how you want to be eaten and want to eat.
I know. It's just very confused. I mean, I have no problem with Migos. They're perfect in my eyes. And Quavo, all I'm trying to say is Katy Perry is very confused. She's mixing her metaphors. She's tweeting about this song called Bon Appetit, saying it's representative of feminist and sexual liberation, but it's really just about cannibalism, it seems. She's so backwards.
I would love this record if it were in a language I did not speak.
Yes, clearly.
It sounds like it cost $1 million. It sounds really good.
Sounds really expensive.
But you, thank you for that clarification, Jenna. I just feel like my problem with Katy Perry as a pop singer who wants to go to some Black places with her music is that her diction keeps telling on her, right? She's got like this very specific California girl diction. Or white California girl diction. She sounds lost. And I think Power is the one song where her diction and the production make sense together.
Okay.
Let's hear the chorus for that. I can sit first. It's got that great drum pile up.
What is the expiration date on Katy Perry? How much more of this do we have to endure? Because she, for a while, her place in pop culture, the pop culture paradigm, made sense. She wasn't as weird as Gaga. She wasn't as raunchy as Miley. She was just sort of milquetoast. You know, you could just throw her on, and she wasn't too complicated.
The worst she was going to do from a problematic standpoint was something like I Kissed a Girl.
Right.
Right? So I don't know where does she go from here, or like what's next? It's an interesting question, because other people who've had these moments of I'm going to, like, you know, they've dipped their toe into the dabbling brook. They've decided they've wanted to try a different body of water. Miley Cyrus had her coming out as a true pop star by appropriating trap music, by twerking at the VMAs in 2013.
That twerking needs air quotes. But
right,
yes.
I'm sorry. You,
attempting to twerk.
I can't, you know, I can't make the air quotes loud enough.
Yeah.
I think Miley Cyrus had a child star breakdown, and her breakdown was to express herself as a white Black person and then came to her senses and now is like a nice good girl, like, quote, good girl again, unquote.
And Gaga goes into television. Gaga does American Horror Story, and then she's on, like, a season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Tries a country-esque record. Yeah. You know what I mean? She's
just trying to see what other molds she can fit into.
Right.
And it's very, it's actually kind of pleasurable to watch.
But Gaga has always been a person whose thing is the protean nature of pop stardom, right? But Gaga had an argument to make about herself and the industry, right? And what it means to like popular music. And it never changes. She basically took Madonna's entire career and distilled it into a mode of being. And she's surpassed Madonna in terms of that idea.
I don't understand why we're talking so much about Katy Perry. Aren't there like a million other interesting musicians we should be talking about? Like, why does she get
so, right,
is it just
yeah.
because she happens to be fully enmeshed within the musculature of just mainstream music, and so there is this arm behind her that can push her album to the top? I just feel like there's so much more interesting music
yes,
out right
there's
now.
There's a meta conversation to be had about why we're talking about Katy Perry. And I think the fact that she, unlike a lot of other people, is willing to at least engage with a problem that exists in not only popular culture, but American culture writ large, right? I think also she's a pop star who spent the last 2 years being severely politically engaged,
yeah.
right? She's somebody who was at Hillary Clinton's side more or less during that entire campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And she's somebody who wanted to matter in a new way. And you would have thought that the music coming out of that new way of mattering would have been in some ways more enlightened than the music we're getting.
The authenticity that she's trying to perform by doing an interview with D-Ray about learning from her past mistakes that she's reduplicating on her album is just, it's confounding because it's like clearly
she
hasn't learned anything. And
she keeps hitting the same wall.
Ugh. At least we get new Nicki. Nicki can do no wrong in my mind. So at least we get a fresh Nicki verse. I'll take that.
I'll take
sure.
that.
Sure.
Woo! Well, that is Katy Perry's Katy Perry's new album, Witness. Maybe you'll do her a solid and acknowledge it exists.
Or not.
Or
and
not.
And our, you know, our search for the sound of the summer will continue, because that ain't it.
We'll be right back. We're going to talk about Bill Cosby.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Azra bag collection and its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Azra is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and your 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Azra collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
So we're back. She did that Albert voice. Hey, we're
no,
back.
No, we should not.
Clearly not. So let's talk about Bill Cosby. He's been on trial for the alleged assault of a woman named Andrea Constand in 2004. They met when she was working at Temple. He was on the board of trustees there. She alleged to authorities that he gave her pills that were herbal supplements that sent her into a state of unconsciousness, and then she was molested. Now, what's interesting about this trial, aside from the fact this is America's dad's on trial, right, is that this woman is one of as many 60 women who have alleged charges of assault and harassment and abuse against Bill Cosby, but she's the only one who has any chance of retribution against him because the statute of limitation is expired in all the other
yes,
cases.
Yes.
So she's a proxy for every woman that he has allegedly mistreated, closing arguments already happened with this trial. By the time you're hearing this, because of our recording schedule, the jury may have already reached a verdict. But what we're interested in is talking about how the narratives are being played out and the lens through which we can look at this trial and understand how gender dynamics and power dynamics tend to play out in both the court of law and then the court of public opinion.
I find disgusting not just what he's being accused of doing, but his comportment at the trial itself.
Yeah.
I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's Ben Franklin and Bill Cosby, one and two.
Right.
And the idea that this man is now weaponizing that to create this cognitive dissonance among not only people from Philadelphia, but around the world.
Yeah.
He's fostering this idea that there's no way that he could have done this. And he didn't
but
have
not
to.
But not him. He's trying to get us to believe there's no way Cliff Huxtable
right.
could have done this. It's not about Bill Cosby.
Right.
And that's the most insidious part of it, is he's weaponized a character that not only he built, but he had, you know,
we helped
thousands,
him build
millions of dollars
right.
to create.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, and to be imprinted on our on
right.
our in our memories
yes.
to say that man is a good man, therefore I am a good man, which is insane.
So let's talk about the ways in which he's using this persona. On the way into the courtroom, he's been saying, hey, 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 the way he did on the cartoon Fat Albert,
mm-hmm.
which he helped create, which for a lot of kids growing up in the 70s and the 80s was a formative cultural experience, not only because you were watching black kids be normal black kids, but because you were learning something about the way the world works and how mm-hmm. to get along with people. And Bill Cosby facilitated that.
Mm-hmm.
He has been bringing Rudy to the courtroom. Keisha Knight Pulliam, the actress who played Rudy on The Cosby Show, the most adorable child. If you did like a top five most adorable children in the history of American television, she's definitely on that list. But she's also a 31-year-old woman now. There's another strain of cognitive dissonance there, too. Like, what does this woman have to do with that little girl?
Well, you made the point earlier, too, that it's very telling that he's choosing to employ an actress who played his daughter on a television show and not his actual daughter.
He's got some.
The thing that's wild is it's working. I mean, at least in the public opinion. Like, there, people are saying things as they go into court, like, we love you, Bill. We've
yep.
watched you for years. People on Twitter are defending him. I mean, to whatever degree that he's employing these tactics and them trying to manipulate the collective memory of who he must have been based on who he was. And because he was this, you know, he was this guardian of respectability and behavior, and he did try to employ an idea about acceptability of African-American and black families in America, there would have maybe not been the Obamas without the Cosbys.
Yep.
So people refuse to believe that he could have done
right.
anything harmful to anyone.
I would also posit this. Cliff Huxtable is not the only Bill Cosby. There's a Bill Cosby that existed in the 1970s.
Oh, yes.
Who was not squeaky clean.
Yes.
Was not a family man.
Yes.
Did not raise
That's
five children in a romantic marriage. The Bill Cosby from the 1970s was a player, was kind of a dog, and he made three movies with Sidney Poitier. That were really popular. At least the first two were really popular, and the third one did okay. But the third one is extremely interesting to me. It's called A Piece of the Action.
Ew. Already. Ew. Already.
There's a scene in the movie in which Bill Cosby is out at a club, and a woman comes up to him and wants to know why he hasn't asked her to dance, because he's at this club with a different woman. The woman is in the bathroom, and she wants to know where her dance is.
David Anderson.
Huh.
You haven't danced with me all night. Now, if you don't dance with me, I'm a holler rape.
Is that a request?
What, the rape or the dance?
Don't make no never mind to me.
Oh, don't make no never mind to me neither.
New Orleans.
Well, now, look out now.
So did we not reach far enough back into the historical memory to understand who Bill Cosby is? Because
it's
it sounds
right
like there is a
there.
Version of him that's right there for the plucking that we could be looking at versus the man who bounced adorable children on his knee and told them weird jokes and pretend to fly them around like airplanes.
Right.
But everything about this trial and everything about the way Cosby is using the public's perception of the kind of person he must be, and it completely doesn't account for the way that power works, the way what we know about how power works, which is that when people have it, they will use it in any way possible.
Any
they
way
will
possible.
Wield it to get yep. whatever results they want to happen. There's a way in which this does not at all take into account that he was a powerful person who had a lot of influence, and he had a sphere around him that if you entered into it, good luck getting back out.
So what's getting lost in all of this is the victim herself. Andrea Constant is somebody that we don't talk about. And to me, there's so much to talk about. She's tall. She's very striking. She has this amazing curly hair that just sits on top of her head like a flame. And she wore this great blue suit to the courtroom one day. I mean, she's so simultaneously absent from the presentation of the out-of-courtroom trial, but also mechanically inextricable from it, right? There's no trial without her.
There's also no desire to humanize her whatsoever.
Right.
We don't know anything about her life except this event. And we also don't know anything about her except the details they're bringing up to discredit her and to say that, you know, because she called him however many times after the assault. All of these things must point to the fact that she's lying or that she's not being honest. And mm-hmm. I don't know how she's supposed to look. And I don't know how she's supposed to present, but she doesn't fit anyone's idea of what a woman 20 years ago or so who fell prey to a man like Bill Cosby should look like or should appear like.
Right.
She's striking. She's strong. She does not seem to be, I mean, you know, I'm not watching it live, but from all the counts I've heard, she's incredibly poised. She's very together. I mean, I think it all amounts to the idea that there are all of these ways for men to defend themselves against attacks like this, and mm-hmm. there are zero strategies for women. There's no correct way for a woman who is a survivor, who is a victim, to have behaved during mm-hmm. an assault, and how they're supposed to have responded to
yes.
that assault,
yes.
and also what they were supposed to have done in the aftermath.
Right.
Like, what does she need to do? Like, what do they need her, you know, like, what do they need from her to prove? They're saying, oh, well, you stayed in contact with him. As if, like, he was on the board of her place of employment,
right.
you know?
No, I mean,
this is exactly how power works, and this is how it works in these scenarios.
And there's also a real misunderstanding about how sexual assault and rape works. As the victim of such an assault, you don't have any say about whether or not that person is in your life or not in your life.
Right.
It is sometimes unclear what has even happened to you. And you hear a lot of these women talk about this. I can tell you, you don't know what's happened to you till after it's happened.
Right.
And whether you're a man or a woman, it's unclear. And you know it's wrong, but you don't know what to do about it.
Unconsciously, it sets up this idea that women are the liars. Women are the ones who are making this up. And the men are the ones who are not guilty. I mean, this is always the thing. It's like, why? It always sets up this paradigm of, somehow you've invited this or you've made it somehow possible.
I think that when you put these behaviors into language and you then try to share those stories with the world as proof of something horrible that happened to you, our own inability to identify with that kind of deviancy just in a weird way makes the victim seem like a liar. And we don't know how to talk about sex at all in this country, for one thing. But for another thing, we don't like to talk about mental illness either. And for a person to sexually assault 60 people, it's a mental thing going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't know how to deal with that either. So it's so much easier to make this perfectly normal-seeming guy, culturally, Cliff Huxtable. Of course Bill Cosby's going to play Cliff Huxtable. It's the most normal thing he's got.
Right, right.
And everybody knows that guy. Nobody knows this crazy-ass druggist, rapist Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that guy. So this woman totally loses.
I mean, it makes sense. As we're sitting here talking, I'm thinking, of course she has to show up looking like the strongest version of herself because she has no other option but strength to try to defeat mm-hmm. that mountain of a persona. I mean, what can she do?
You know, I mean, looking at her and not knowing the language to use for her masculinity, for her obvious strength that just comes through every picture that you see of her, even
right.
in the courtroom sketches, it really struck me in the ways that we weren't talking about her and how she looked and her side of the story. Because in some ways, the other thing about her side of the story is they're a dime a dozen in this case. You know, it's a kind of normal. And I bring this up just to say that, you know, we just also, the whole country, sat in front of their TVs and computers last week to watch a similarly built man recount a story of his harassment with a person who was in his life on a fairly regular basis, and the president of the United States.
Right.
And we couldn't stop talking about how Jim Comey looked. We couldn't stop talking about his demeanor, his affect, his height, his bravery for coming forward with this story of a person's driving him crazy with harassment.
And yet, because he kept meticulous notes, that must be the accurate account of what actually happened. It's not really a character assassination. It's more about his diligence and his fastidiousness is the thing that we look to as evidence that he's telling the truth.
Right. And the Comey thing is actually quite fascinating when you try to overlay James Comey's testimony in front of the Senate last week against Donald J. Trump with what Bill Cosby's lawyers were trying to do with Constant, which was what we were talking about, which is, why didn't you say anything? Right. I don't understand why you didn't keep this person. Why did you keep accepting this person's phone calls? Why did you not just...
And yet somehow we've managed to find a lot more sympathy for James Comey not being able to resist the overtures or advances of the president, but we somehow can't muster the same amount of empathy or sympathy for a woman like Andrea, who is at the time in her 30s trying to deal with a man twice her age. We can't seem to figure out how one scenario is entirely possible and entirely in the realm of reason and the other one isn't.
Yeah. And so another part of this also is that Andrea Constant had no power in relation to Bill Cosby, right? And it was hard to believe that a person, the head of the FBI, is intimidated by the president of the United States. These are both powerful men.
Right.
I wanted to play a little bit from that testimony last week. And it's the conversation between Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, and James Comey, in which she frames what was for me the most fascinating non-political disclosure aspect of that entire scenario.
Now, here's the question. You're big, you're strong. I know the Oval Office, and I know what happens to people when they walk in. There is a certain amount of intimidation. But why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
It's a great question. Maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was playing in my mind, because I was going to remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I remember saying, I agree he's a good guy, as a way of saying I'm not agreeing with what you just asked me to do. Again, maybe other people would be stronger in that circumstance, but that's how I conducted myself. I hope I'll never have another opportunity. Maybe if I did it again, I would do it better.
That is just really striking to me. And I think the thing that was so riveting to people was you had this big, strong man admitting that he should have or could have been stronger and that he maybe did something wrong.
Everyone's favorite auntie, Congresswoman Maxine Waters from California, who tweeted, "So Comey told Jeff Sessions he didn't want to be alone with Trump. Women across the country can relate." Of course, she's making a dig at the president, but she's also making a dig at the ways in which women are often placed into these scenarios that Jim Comey is talking about with such candor and being rewarded for. And I think on one hand, people are talking about the bravery of admitting that he felt intimidated and what that must be like. And wow, he's a man and we never hear men say that. But Andrea's brave too. And she's not going to get any of these cultural rewards. No one's going to want to hear her story. I mean, I do. I want to watch that Lifetime movie. But the point is that they're both doing these incredibly heroic acts.
Right. But
these things
that
take a tremendous amount of gumption to come forward and speak out against two of the most powerful people, one in the government, one culturally, and the outcomes of both their scenarios are going to be very, very, very different.
I will also say that one of the things that happened last week was everybody was trying to cast the James Comey movie. Who would play James Comey? Living or dead? Nobody is trying to cast the Andrea Constant.
I would cast Linda Hamilton personally, but that's neither here nor there. But I, you know, literally, she is going up against the Terminator. I mean, anyway.
Listen, at the end of the day, the only way she can speak is through the jury's verdict. And it's her only loudspeaker. It's her only mouthpiece, which then makes it really unfair for the way a person like Bill Cosby is able to then create a counter-narrative that is extrajudicial.
The president and James Comey don't have to speak through filters. They don't have to go through a lens.
Nope.
She does.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't take accounts of sexual assault seriously. We still don't take women seriously whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Or this would already be resolved. We wouldn't have to have 60 plus accounts resting on the shoulders of one person in the case of Andrea Constant versus Bill Cosby in order to say, yes, this is a bad man.
Yep.
It doesn't work like that.
So in listening to James Comey talk about President Trump's dogged pursuit of him, it does kind of remind me of the way Bill Cosby was pursuing that woman in A Piece of the Action. It reminds me of the way people talked about Donald Trump sexually harassing them.
But maybe there's another point to be made, though, is that when it comes to thinking about how men are victims, we understand that language and we understand the syntax of how these things, like maybe the juxtaposition between Comey and Andrea is that we understand the language of victimhood when it's shown to us through a man who doesn't possibly compute as a victim.
Yeah.
When we see it through the lens of a woman, it's the total opposite. We can't find the ounce of empathy within us to understand what her position might have been like. But when it comes to someone like Comey, we do understand it.
But the thing that's kind of annoying about talking about James Comey and Donald Trump and Bill Cosby is that they're ultimately powerful. Who's more famous than Bill Cosby? Who's more powerful than the president of the United States or the head of the FBI? There are a lot of people in the world who have stuff like this happen to them every day of their lives, who the power, it's not an official power, it's a relationship power. And those people really feel like they can't speak.
Mm.
And the outcomes of these scenarios matter a lot to those people in terms of empowering them to open their mouths about things that are happening to them too.
That's very true.
And that is why I'm so angry at Bill Cosby for using Keisha Knight Pulliam to give him at least a cultural exoneration. It's not fair.
It's not fair, but it's never fair. And there's too much at stake. There's too much at stake for all the people that you're talking about for this to be something that he can Fat Albert his way out of.
That is our show. Still Processing is a product of the New York Times. It's produced by Jenna Weiss-Berman, Henry Malofsky, Ricky Novetsky, and Max Linsky from Pineapple Street Media.
Special thank you for editorial oversight from Sasha Weiss, Lisa Tobin, and Samantha Hennig. Our theme music is by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
And you can find all our episodes and fun things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing. And remember to leave us a review on iTunes, please. Speaking of which.
Yes. So you asked and we listened. Last week, we talked about our favorite summer jams, past, future, and present. And people want a playlist of it. So we're going to put it out. It's going to be on our homepage at nytimes.com/stillprocessing. And we'll tweet it out too.
Steven, we heard you.
So, Wesley.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to this weekend?
I have a favorite book. I've got a lot of favorite books, but one of my favorite books to use in the kitchen is called The Flavor Thesaurus by Nikki Segnet. I just think cilantro is great. I'm going to use it all the time. I'm not going to subject anybody else to it, but I love it and I'm putting it in everything I'm eating this summer.
That sounds incredible. I'd love to have some cilantro in an unexpected way at your house this weekend. Thank you for inviting me over.
Smart Wool makes merino wool socks and apparel designed to keep you comfortable. Because they want to help you play, explore, and thrive outside with every thread they knit and every step you take. And the right comfort can keep you outside, so you can do all the things you live for longer. Get 15% off your first order on smartwool.com and get out there. Smart Wool. Go far. Feel good.